It is the final week of organized team activities, and next week the Tennessee Titans will hold their mandatory minicamp. After that, players will be on their own until the start of training camp. Yes, folks, the offseason is moving quickly. And before we get into the weightier matters of this episode of Believe in Titans, let's start off with a quick look at some recent news items. Since last we talked, first-round picks Peter Skoronski and third-round pick Tyjae Spears signed their contracts, which leaves only second-round choice Will Levis, the quarterback out of Kentucky, as the only one of this year's six Titans draft picks who remains unsigned. No reason to think that there will be any issues in the negotiations with Levis, but it should be noted that the final member of last year's draft class to sign was quarterback Malik Willis, and his deal did not get done until the day rookies reported for the start of training camp. So that will bear watching over the next couple weeks. A couple days ago, the Titans signed defensive lineman Jaleel Johnson, a 28-year-old veteran who has played for four teams in six seasons. He was a fourth-round pick by Minnesota in 2017 and has played 74 games in his career with 21 starts. Only once in 2020 with the Vikings was he a full-time starter. And finally, punter Brett Kern retired from the NFL on Thursday. Kern, of course, played 12 full seasons and part of one other with Tennessee and was a three-time Pro Bowler and a 2019 All-Pro. Most notably, in my mind, 373 punts inside the 20 versus just 48 touchbacks during his time with the Titans, a ratio of 7.8 inside the 20 for every touchback, which is a remarkable number to me. We can touch on those further as need be. But as always, this is Believe in Titans with the usual cast of characters. I am David Beauclair, joined by former Titans cornerback Denard Walker. Denard, how are you?
I'm doing great this evening. How are you and John doing this evening,
David? I'm doing great, John, of course, being John Glennon of the Nashville Post. John, how are you?
I am well. Hope you guys are too.
Doing good. And the big news in the NFL, of course, in since our last meeting was the Arizona Cardinals' decision to release wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins. Hopkins is a bona fide star in this league. The Titans need wide receiver help. I think we all can agree on that. And we have seen, since Mike Vrabel became head coach in 2018, player after player after player after player with Houston Texans ties come to Tennessee. DeAndre Hopkins, of course, started his career, spent his best days with the Houston Texans. John, I'll start with you. Is he the one who's not going to get here somehow, or should the Titans be doing everything they can to get him here?
Well, my first kind of inclination on DeAndre Hopkins is steer clear. That's kind of my initial gut reaction, and plenty of reasons for that. You know, he's soon to be 31. You know, Titans have gone down the veteran wide receiver road many times over the years, including certainly the last two when they gave up draft picks for Julio Jones and for Robert Woods. Neither of those really panned out. You know, we're starting to see DeAndre Hopkins miss some games, significant amounts of games, played only 19 out of 34 the last 2 years. Well, six of those were suspension, but he's also had an MCL. He's had a hamstring injury. And he's also, you know, going to be looking for big money, you know, reportedly looking for something along the lines of Odell Beckham, which was about $15 million or so. So all that, you know, makes me initially say, don't do it, steer clear. But unfortunately, I think the Titans are in such a precarious position at wide receiver. I think they have to go for it. I think they have to be in the running at least. I think they have to seriously kick the tires, check the price on DeAndre Hopkins, because there is so little proven track record in that wide receiver room for the Titans. You know, you've got some potential in Burks, you know, maybe in Phillips, you know, and maybe in even in some of the Colton Dowell as well, this year's seventh rounder. There's no proven track record. The numbers of the returning receivers are pitiful when you compare them to the rest of the league. You know, and so I think you have to at least be in the running for him. I think you have to at least try and sell DeAndre Hopkins on the fact that he put up big numbers when Tim Kelly was his offensive coordinator with Houston, that he's got that connection with Mike Vrabel, and that this is a, you know, this is an offense that is rebuilding, revamping, you know, and that he can be a part of that. So I hate to do it, but I think Titans have to be in. They have to be competitive on this.
Yeah, it's hard to it's hard not to think of the failed Julio Jones attempt here when you're talking about DeAndre Hopkins. But the big difference is, of course, then you were trying to pair Julio Jones with A.J. Brown and what you thought was going to be the number one wide receiver tandem in the league. And number two, you traded, you paid a heavy price to get Julio Jones. With, you know, yes, Hopkins will carry a hefty price tag, and it's more than the Titans' current cap room at the moment. But in terms of future capital, you won't have to give up anything there. So it makes a little more sense, I think, that way. Denard, you certainly know as well as anyone, a guy at 31, maybe he's not as fast as he used to be, but he's a big, strong guy, can make contested catches. What could a guy like that do for the Titans offense?
I love D-Hop. You know, I've been a big fan of his since he was at Clemson. He is an explosive player. Let's not forget last year. I know he missed six games because of the he violated the league's performance enhancing drug policy. But when he came back last year, I mean, against especially the Saints, he lit it up, 10 receptions for 103 yards, and he was absolutely – he was torching that secondary. So that told me that he still got it. He still got something in the tank. And when you look at this receiving core, David, right now your number one receiver is going into his second year. Now, I know last year when his number was called, he did a phenomenal job, and we're talking about Treylon Burks. But outside of Treylon Burks, your most experienced receiver is Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. And he's only going into his fourth year. So it would make sense if you ran Carthon, you haven't made a big splash in free agency, and now you can bring in D-Hop, which would basically help that perimeter game, because what D-Hop brings, he brings experience. This is a team right now, they're lacking experience in the perimeter game. So it would make sense right now. I hope it's not about money, but you got to understand, David, that Tim Kelly and D-Hop, they have a history together. Let's not forget, in 2017, the best 2017 to 2019, the best receiver in the game was D-Hop. So it would just make sense. And Tim Kelly was the offensive coordinator in 2019. Familiarity breeds success in this league. I mean, I think it would be a great move by the Titans.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing he does, and that I, you know, and it's a skill that I don't think would probably ever go away from a wide receiver, is his ability to make contested catches. I mean, if the ball's within his reach, and regardless of whether there's a defender on him, two defenders on him, it you know, that guy seems to come down with the ball. And Ryan Tannehill proved when A.J. Brown was here, he's willing to trust his wide receivers to go make a play if he thinks they can go make a play. And, you know, from that sense, from that perspective, it makes perfect sense to me that this would work. You know, Mike Vrabel, like I said, players who know him have wanted to come play for him. You would have to believe that would give the Titans some sort of cachet in this process if they're in fact going for him. And Rand Carthon wasn't the guy who traded for Julio Jones and got very little in return for that. So he's not, you know, he's not feeling the sting of that the way the fans are, certainly the way John Robinson, I'm sure, did a year or so ago. So it's easy, I think, for the Titans to get and Titans fans to get excited about this possibility. Fact of the matter is, though, there's probably a whole lot of teams out there that are looking at this guy and thinking they, you know, that he can help them because he, I'm sure he can. Like I saw one report that said Miami would be a would be a really logical point for him, where they, you know, he could line up in the slot with Hill and Waddle on either side. I mean, can you imagine what a nightmare that would be for defenses to deal with? But
I was going to mention too, David, you know, and sort of along the lines of what you're saying, you know, we're sort of taking a look at it, obviously, from whether the Titans should pursue DeAndre Hopkins, and kind of, I think our consensus is, yeah, they have to. But on the other hand, if you're DeAndre Hopkins, and you probably kind of got your pick of the litter as far as teams, you know, where do the Titans rank aside from the Tim Kelly and Mike Vrabel connections? You know, if you're DeAndre Hopkins and you're going on 31, you know, and you want to win a championship probably soon, you know, how high are the Titans ranking on that list? And, you know, I guess on a recent podcast, I guess I Am Athlete podcast, he kind of rattled off his kind of his five choices, top choices as passers that he would want to, you know, catch passes from: Josh Allen, Pat Mahomes, Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson, and Justin Herbert. You know, so obviously tough competing there. I know the Chiefs are certainly looking for wide receiver too, and it would be pretty tough to, you know, to pick a team for DeAndre Hopkins to pick any other team over the Chiefs, I would think, if the money was right. So we have to look at it from that angle too. But yeah, bottom line, Titans at least have to run it up the flagpole, give it a shot here.
Yeah, I think what his choice of quarterback speaks to too is he's looking at Super Bowl contenders, which the Titans are not mentioned as Super Bowl contenders this year. Although I saw a report in the last day or so that he's even open to going back to Houston, maybe, because he sees Houston as an up and coming team right now. So the Titans might want him badly. You know, Moran Carthen could be saying, I've been patient this whole offseason. This is exactly the sort of moment I've been waiting for. Now I'm going all in to get this guy. And all DeAndre Hopkins has to do is say no. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't work out for the Titans. And, it certainly would put a lot of people's minds at ease. I think we can all agree on that if it were to happen. But you know, it's now June 1st, of course, too, when things will start happening and some more deals will get done across the league. So I guess the point here is stay tuned and we'll see. You know, Denard, you mentioned Treylon Burks and all the reviews out of OTAs to this point are that you know, his attitude is great. His performance is great. His work ethic is great. You know, certainly it's unusual for guys to be saying a lot of negative things at this point. But for a guy who had such a rough off season last year, what could a smooth, healthy, productive off season mean to him? Because, you know, as you've said, he had his moments last year. His numbers were not, you know, ultimately they were okay in terms of other rookie receivers. You know, could he be among that second year wide receiver group, the guy who's making the biggest jump this year?
Absolutely. Cause the only thing we talked about last year was his asthma, and that wasn't very fun. But this year we haven't talked about him missing any workouts. So that's a good thing. But you know, one of the things I love about Treylon is we were on him last offseason, especially, you know, in the OTAs. But, you know, what you want to hear from a second year, at least what you want from your second year players, you want him to evolve. You want him to continue to get better because you drafted him so high. Right now, we know next year there is no receiver. I mean, when you look at this receiving core outside of Treylon, who's going to scare you? So we know that there's going to be a lot of pressure this offseason and a lot of weight that's going to be on his shoulder. What I love about Treylon is, like I said before, as I alluded to earlier, when his number is called, he makes plays. And what you want to see is a jump from year one to year two. And what better way to make that jump when we're not talking about his health? And that was an issue last year. We kept talking about the asthma, the weather, this and that. And this year we haven't even talked anything. We haven't said anything about that. So that's a positive. And so when you got that positive, and not to mention the chemistry between him and Ryan Tannehill, that's what I want to see this offseason, is how those two are connecting, how they're gelling, because Ryan is going to need a lot of help this year. You can't just depend on Derrick Henry anymore. You got to have a true number two player to go to in this league. You look at Kansas City, they don't just rely on one player. They don't just rely on Travis Kelce. What you have is a multitude of players making plays, Pacheco in the running game. You look at the perimeter, they added Juju Smith-Schuster. So for Tennessee this year, who's going to make plays other than the King this year?
John, you've been out at OTAs a couple of days. Do you notice anything in particularly different? Does Burks look faster? Does he look stronger? When you watch him, what sort of comes to mind immediately for you?
I would say, yeah, both. He looks faster. He looks stronger. He looks healthier. He's getting open. You know, and it's certainly not just me that is noticing these things too. You know, it's been a steady stream of praise from coaches. You know, and normally coaches are a little bit averse to offering too much praise, you know, even in the off season. But, you know, we talked to Rob Moore the other day, and he talked about how, you know, how much mentally stronger he thought Treylon Burks was. Physically, he's in much better condition, much better shape. And kind of those two things together have made Treylon a more confident player out there. And then when Ryan Tannehill talked about Treylon Burks the other day, you know, he was saying things like, you know, Traylon's flying around out there. You know, he's getting open and he's understanding the big picture concepts better, not just what Treylon Burks is supposed to do, but how that fits into the big picture of the offense. And he, that word confidence came up again with Ryan Tannehill, that Treylon Burks seems to be much more confident in general. And I should point out, too, we probably need to give a little shout out to our guy Paul Kuharski, who I thought had a pretty interesting story about Treylon Burks from last week's OTAs, when Treylon was trying to get back from Arkansas to Nashville for a practice. His flight got delayed, so he wasn't going to be able to make it on time. Turns out all the rental cars had been taken, so Treylon, in order not to be, you know, missing a day of OTA or anything like that, actually managed to track down a private pilot and who rented a Cessna airplane and flew Treylon from Arkansas to Nashville so that he would be there for the OTA. So that's kind of the, you know, that sort of illustrates a little bit more of that kind of can-do attitude that we're seeing from Treylon Burks. And I'm impressed. I think we're going to see bigger numbers. I was tossing around some thoughts in my head. And I was thinking maybe we get close to 50 catches this year for Treylon, which is up from 33 last year. Maybe 650, 700 yards, maybe about 5 touchdowns or so. That doesn't sound like way over the top. But let's remember, we're dealing with the Titans offense right now. It comes kind of with limitations. So those are my kind of thoughts. I don't know if you guys had any thoughts on potential numbers for a new and improved Treylon Burks this year.
Yeah, you know, the one thing with his confidence, and in a funny sort of way, I think his confidence showed last year when, you know, some of the things you talked about, Denard, where, you know, he was taking heat all off season for asthma, maybe being out of condition, whatever. He dealt with some injuries along the way. I mean, it was in some ways it was the worst. It was about as bad a rookie season as you would have expected from him. And it never seemed to get to him, you know, like when the media talked to him, he was always fine. He never ruffled at the questions. He answered them. I, you know, thinking back on that, it, to me, that displayed a real sort of self-confidence that, you know, now that things are going well, will manifest itself in a much different way. And yeah, just that, you know, that story about him. You know, a lot of guys would have said, oh, well, you know, it's voluntary. I'll just call the coach, tell him what happened. I'll miss a day and I'll be there. I'll be there the next day. And, you know, he didn't do that. So that's, I think that's reason against. I would say 50 catches sounds conservative to me. I, you know, given the rest of this wide receiver group, given what this offense is going to be. I mean, if he's not at 65 catches or so, this is going to be a really bad year for the Titans. He's the guy who can sort of smooth some of these rough edges by taking a 5-yard slant and turning it into a 70-yard touchdown. And if he can do that a few times, the way we saw AJ Brown used to do it, it'll have a profound impact on this offense.
And David, just to piggyback on that, that's what Ryan Tannehill is looking for. He's looking for his next Corey Davis, the season that he had a few years ago before he left to New York. You know, he had that big season of nearly 1,000 yards receiving. Unfortunately, he missed a couple games. He's looking for that next AJ. He's looking for that next best receiver. I think Treylon has a chance to move into some pretty elite company. And I think, you know what, 50 catches, John, I agree with David. He needs somewhere between 65, hell, maybe even 70 receptions next year for this offense to put up some numbers.
Yeah, I mean, there's no Austin Hooper, right?
There's no Austin Hooper right now.
I mean, we've seen it. You know, Ryan Tannehill is not, you know, he says one thing, but his play speaks otherwise. Like, he will play favorites with his receivers. Right. If Treylon Burks can build that connection with him this offseason, Ryan Tannehill will look to him and will throw it to him time and time again when they get into games.
And John, I wanted to say something else right quick. And you said when you was talking and you were saying how, you know, he got back to Nashville, I thought you were going to say he ran.
Now, that would have been a hell of a story.
That's what I was about to say. Like, where are you going with this?
I think we all would have been talking about that story before now.
Arkansas is not that far from Tennessee, but I was going to say, no, come on, man. Come on, John.
That's right. He arrived at 140 pounds, but he got there.
Oh, all right. On to one of this year's rookies who did have a rough day the other day when the media was at practice. Quarterback Will Levis, who we mentioned earlier, had a particularly rough time, had people talking about him. He's fumbled some snaps at one point, showed some frustration, threw into traffic. John, is this reason for concern? Is this, pretty typical of every rookie quarterback around the league, you think? What's the early evaluation of him?
Yeah, my early evaluation is that's fine. That's okay. In fact, I think it may actually be a little bit of a good thing that we've seen some struggles, that we've written about some struggles, that fans know about some struggles, because I think we can remember going back maybe just like a week or two earlier, you know, the fan base got a look at maybe a highlight clip or two of Will Levis throwing in an OTA, or at a rookie mini camp, and a highlight clip or two looked nice. And so many people were ready to chuck Ryan Tannehill out the door at that point and anoint Will Levis as the starter. Well, pump the brakes a little bit on that. You know, this is a rookie, and there's still plenty to like about him. You know, he's got a lot of things in his favor. He played in the pro style offense. He's a smart guy. He's got a big arm, but there are still going to be predictable struggles for a rookie. You know, he's a guy that came in needing some work, you know, not necessarily the most accurate passer. He's got to work on that decision making. He's got to work on that. So these are things that aren't too, you know, too shocking to me. And again, I say it's probably a good thing in the big picture, because this takes a little bit of the heat of maybe the expectations off of him just a little bit. Now, fumbling snaps, which he did, I think, a couple days in a row out there. That's another thing, you know, that has to stop. And, you know, Mike Vrabel kind of covered for him a little bit by saying, well, you know, we had a bunch of different centers rotating in and out. And, you know, it's difficult to change all the time like that. But nonetheless, that is the big bugaboo is turnovers, whether it's a fumble, whether it's an interception. So he's got to get that straight. And you know, at least we saw certainly that he is taking it very seriously, because after one of those fumbled snaps, he nearly smashed his helmet on the ground. And Mike Vrabel said afterward, Yeah, well, if he did that, we just have to dock his pay, since that's one of those helmets that has the little radios in it and all that kind of thing. So we would have had to take that out of his salary, but it's a good thing he didn't do that.
Denard, we know that practices are scripted, that coaches on both sides know what the other side is going to be doing, but are there days where a defense is told, we're going to put the kid to the test today. We're going to show him some things that he hasn't seen, and we want to see his ability to decipher things, and if so, how likely is it that a rookie quarterback is going to succeed on a practice day like that?
Well, first of all, in OT, it's very rare at this time of year that your defensive coach is going to say, hey, let's do some disguises. Let's kind of move around a little bit, because a lot of times when your Will is probably going against other rookies, so there's not much that they don't, they're trying to learn the playbook themselves. Now, when you get in training camp, you will have coaches sometimes say, listen, let's kind of mix it up a little bit, because right now everything is scripted. What rookies are trying to do, they're trying to get a grasp of the playbook. Now, David, we talked about Will Levis. He could have been potentially the number one draft pick. We talked about his athleticism. We talked about the fact that he is 6'3", got a Greek god body, 231 pounds. He's got a cannon of an arm. I think he can unleash it about almost 80 yards. But one of the things that we talked about Will Levis coming in is that there's a lot of cons to his game. We talked about his mechanics. We talked about his footwork. We also talked about his struggles reading coverages. So right now, who has their hands full is Pat O'Hara, the quarterback coach right now, because he's the one that's got to make sure that he kind of get that corrected. So when you go into training camp, you'll see a little bit more production out of Will. But that's not uncommon for a rookie. Believe me, I've seen a lot of great rookie quarterbacks struggle in voluntary camps.
We do need to correct you. It's Charles London, who is now the quarterback's coach.
Oh, they moved Pat O'Hara out. Oh, come
He's still
on.
there, but I believe he's
Pat down to
passing game analyst
passing
now.
game. Oh, what is that? Passing game. Oh, that's almost saying like you already out the door.
Yeah, you see him in these OTAs. I mean, he's still out there on the field. He's with the quarterbacks. He's certainly involved in that development process to some degree.
I'm just making sure, because I'm a big fan of Pat O'Hara's. I've been watching him since he was, he's the backup quarterback from 85 through 88 at USC behind Rodney Peete. So he's a good quarterback, and I watched him a couple of times at a lot of the arena games.
I mean, he was a good enough quarterback
Yes.
that he was. I mean, he was going to be the starter his senior year. In fact, was the starter. I think it was maybe in fall camp, blew out his knee. And it opened the door for Todd Marinovich as a freshman
Oh.
to step in and become the legend that was Todd Marinovich. But Pat O'Hara was good enough, similar to Matt Castle coming out of the
Yeah.
same school, USC, like never really got to play much in college, still got drafted into the NFL. Tampa Bay drafted him, and he spent a year or two there before he went to the Arena League, and then went into coaching in the Arena League and was a really successful head coach. I find Pat to be an interesting guy too.
Me
And I'm
too.
surprised he hasn't had opportunities to move up, or maybe he has and hasn't taken them. But yeah, going from quarterbacks coach to passing game analyst feels like this might be his last season in Tennessee, and he's gonna have to find somewhere else to go. Speaking of people on the move, this isn't as big a move, but one of the stories of these OTAs too is that Elijah Molden, the third year cornerback, or I guess you call him a defensive back. The Titans have never really called him a true cornerback, has been getting work at safety after injuries pretty much derailed all of his second season. He was their primary slot cornerback in 2021 as a rookie. John, we'll go back to you. Is this a demotion of sorts for Elijah Molden? Is this a move looking to the future? How do you sort of interpret this?
Yeah, I look at it maybe a couple different ways. I think one of them, when you see Roger McCreary coming back and now likely to be flanked by Sean Murphy Bunting on one side and Christian Fulton on the other side. Assuming all those three guys are healthy, I think McCreary is your new nickel guy. Hi. And really, that's the only position that Molden had played. You know, he's not going to be an outside guy. So do you want him to be a backup nickel guy and you know, only play really in you know, four DB packages or if McCreary gets hurt? Or do you maybe want to give him more of a role, a bigger role, and maybe even be a third safety? And I think, you know, some of Molden's characteristics maybe suit him well for the safety spot. You know, he's an aggressive guy. He's a physical guy. He plays well around the line of scrimmage. He's a pretty good tackler. On the other hand, he doesn't have great vertical speed. You know, when we saw him, you know, a couple of times get zinged a couple times, even in the slot. You know, and I think it's probably Denard certainly can shed some more light on this, but it's probably a little bit more acceptable to not have that great vertical speed at safety than at corner. And then, you know, again, as you're looking at the depth chart at safety, you've got Kevin Byard and Amani Hooker as your two starters, but it drops off a cliff after those two guys in terms of experience. You know, you've got, I think Josh Thompson and Mike Brown are the two backups right now. I don't think either of those guys has ever played a defensive snap in the NFL. You know, you've got a couple of free agents, you know, UDFA guys that are in there, but they need better safeties, and they need a kind of a versatile guy who the kind that they've had in the past. It can sort of be that maybe that you know maybe handle some cornerback role, maybe handle some safety. And I think Molden would be an excellent fit for that. So I think there's a couple things in play, but I like the move if it does end up happening, and we'll see if it does.
Yeah, there was talk about him possibly even being a safety, you know, coming out in his rookie season that this was a move that could happen. And this is a team, this is a coaching staff that has had good success with three safety packages. You go back to Dane Cruikshank a couple years ago, sort of as a matchup safety against some of the more challenging tight ends when Byard, Hooker, and Andrew Adams were all healthy last year. Hooker was sort of that guy who came down and did some different sorts of things. So Denard, you know, we'll ask you this. Playing slot cornerback, operating in those small tight spaces like that versus safety where everything's in front of you, you're moving forward a little bit. How big an adjustment is that, and how big a challenge for Elijah Molden to make that move?
Well, if you're a corner moving from slot to safety, you'll love that because that's hard. The slot corner is the hardest position on the field because there's more room, there's more area that you have to learn how to maneuver through. Now, when you are a safety and when you come down, typically you will be covering much bigger guys and in particular tight ends. So that would be an adjustment is playing in slot. Now, Elijah, one of the things you love about him at Washington, he would be all over the field. You will see him at slot corner. You will see him at corner. Sometimes they had him back like a safety. They had him all over the field. That's one of the reasons they drafted him. John Robertson loved his versatility. They thought Elijah can play the slot corner, which he did his rookie year and played well. Then he also can play the corner position. Then he can go back and learn a safety position. Listen, Tennessee had a great safety that is right around the size of Elijah Molden back in the late 1990, late 90s, early 2000. Blaine Bishop, same thing out of Ball
I've heard
State.
of him,
Five,
yeah.
five, five. Hey, Big Bro is about 5'9". Elijah's about 5'10". Now, David, the only thing you're not going to like about him, Blaine didn't have no big old arms, and Elijah doesn't have big arms. But what you love
Well,
about
are we back to talking about long arms
Ah, you
again
know what? I had to
tonight?
get that in there. I had to sneak that in there with the arm situation. That's the main thing has been all in my head. But I think this would be a great move because, John, you just, and David, you just alluded to the fact that Josh Thompson and Mike Brown, and we don't know Kevin's situation. I mean, right now it's up in the air. So right now you need depth because if Amani goes down, and we know last year, look what happened. Amani was hurt. So who are you going to plug in just in case something happens? This would be a great fit for Elijah to get on the field. Not to mention, David, he was hampered last year. He only played in two games. He had that groin injury. And he talked about that groin injury that's been something hampering him since 2021. So if he comes back healthy, And you're talking about plugging him in that safety position. I mean, who's to know? What if Kevin's next year is, this could be his last year in Nashville. We never know this. So this could be your future safety.
Yeah. I mean, this team drafted safeties in 2021 and 2022. Both of those guys, you know, Brady Breeze first and then Theo Jackson last year, both got cut, both got picked up by other teams, and they're gone. I mean, the attempts to build depth at that position haven't worked out the last couple of years. So you need to create that depth somehow. And say this about Molden: he's a guy who has shown that he can learn. And even if he makes mistakes, you go back to his rookie year, struggled in week two and week three. I think it was week three, didn't play hardly at all, came back in week four, played well, and was the guy the rest of the year. So he can figure it out as he goes and figure it out pretty quickly. So I think from that, that's another reason that you can say, okay, this is a move that makes sense.
And David, don't forget, let's go way back. Now, Marcus Robertson to me is probably other than Kevin Byard, one of the greatest free safeties, played 10 years for the Oilers and Titans organization. When they, Sarge, when they drafted Marcus Robertson in 1991 out of Iowa State, he was a cornerback, and they converted him over to safety and spent 10 years in Pro Bowls and had a 12-year career now. What is a DB coach for the New Orleans Saints?
Yeah. Blaine played. He's not shy about reminding people he played cornerback early at Ball State.
Oh, he didn't play no corner, no Ball State. He's lying.
He will tell you that he did. I can't vouch for it. I didn't. Yeah, he didn't watch him at Ball State, but he said
those bone legs.
You'll have to check with him on that. And with that, I guess we'll. We will wrap it up. This is the time moves quickly every week. And as usual, we thank you all for tuning in, for downloading, for telling your friends. And as we move through the off season, heading toward another season. But we will be back to talk to you next week with another episode of Believe in Titans. Until then, Denard Walker, good day, sir.
Thank you.
John Glennon, a good day to you.
Thank you, David and Denard.
And I am David Beauclair. Again, thank you all. This is Believe in Titans.